This is AM Studios Podcast, where we curate all the knowledge, resources, and power you need to help you create your business in entertainment, podcasting, music, tech, art, fashion, and more. Every week, we share everything we've learned at AM from the greatest minds in the business. Let's go.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Future Insiders program, right here powered by YouTube Black in collaboration with Lock Communications. My name is Lee Art, and I'll be facilitating today's program, just how everything will be going about. We are joined by Nivo. He is from T-Effect, and he falls under management. And then we have Sisle Lesego, and she's under TaylorMade Legal, and she will fall under the legal conversation. So I just want to give them a chance to just explain what their companies do, who they are, when they started, you know, basic, just so you can go right into it. Yeah.
I'm assuming I'm going to go first.
I'm Lesego Balesa Chaka, and I am the managing director at TaylorMade Legal Solutions. Essentially what TaylorMade does, so we are an entertainment legal consultancy. We offer consulting services in the legal space to artists, talent agencies, so from LORC to your Duma collectives. And I mean, honestly, I would mention who it is that we represent, so to speak, but I'd literally have to go through the entire industry. And so, yeah, essentially that's what we do. So we offer legal advice, legal counsel. It goes as far as, you know, legal drafting and anything legal, really, that has to do in the entertainment, media, and music space. So yeah, that's essentially what TaylorMade does.
Hey.
Please switch it out. Just make sure it's on.
Hey guys. Hope everyone is good. I am Nivo from the T-Effect, co-CEO and creative director. We are a management company. We represent, I can't flex like a CFO. We don't represent the whole industry. But we are a client for so we represent artists like AKA, Musa Keys, Aubrey Guana, Costa Titch. The list goes on and on. We've got about 8 clients, but what we basically do is building the ecosystem for each of the artists, so that they can just do what they do best and become stars. Yeah.
All right. So I think we'll start with management precisely, then we'll get into the legal side of things, because I think we need to understand first that you need a proper management before we get into the legal stuff. So what should one expect from management? So now I'm a talent, I think I'm good at what I do. When I'm approaching a management company, what should I be expecting?
It's a very complicated one, because you've got to have to look at it in two different points of view. So the first part of it is, we as managers go into clients knowing very well that we are going to be glorified babysitters. That's what we do. We basically, when you go into management, you need to have a point of view of understanding that these people are crazy. There's a certain level of crazy that they need to do what they do best. So you have to go into that knowing very well that these guys are going to be weird. Now, for the point of view of the artist needs to find someone that is as hungry as they are for what you guys are doing. So for example, your manager doesn't have to be the most qualified human being, but if it's like one of your boys who's hungry as fuck. Sorry, can I swear? No, I can't, sorry. It's going on YouTube. Someone who's as hungry as you are to build and try and learn and figure this thing out. Because at the end of the day, when you the artist and the manager are partners in this thing, so you can't find someone that's not going to work as hard as you, or someone that's just out here for clout and, you know, definitely, glory. So that, I think that's the most important thing, finding someone as hungry as you are. Yeah.
But once I do, what could I be expecting from your company? What are the things that you do for a brand or for a person that's in the entertainment industry?
I think the first thing that we do when we onboard a client is building a business plan, because the artist is the business. That's the most important thing for you to know, is that the artist is a business. So when we onboard someone, we build a business plan that's going to run We have 5-year goals, we have 10-year goals, there's 15-year goals. Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is we're trying to build something that's long and sustainable. So when we do that process and we go through that process, we look at the 360 of the artist. So what does the finance look like? What does the legal look like? What does mental health right now? Because that's a big thing, you know. So you have to be on top of all of those different things. What does the family situation look like? So what we do is we'll build the entire infrastructure and the ecosystem so the artist can literally just focus on making the music and everything else is taken care of.
Okay. And does bookings and just trying to get them out there known, finding them brand deals, does that still fall under what you do?
Yes. So I think if you were to look at the pillars that we handle, we handle the overall brand and positioning. We handle bookings, we'll handle, the music side of things. So we'll have to figure out what's the best deal for the artist, then the best way for them to release music. For our artists, it's 8 different artists with 8 different deals, 8 different structures that work for each of them. So we'll also handle the label services, work with the label hand in hand. I'm just trying to think, brand deals, yes. We may onboard some agencies for certain things, but we'll basically oversee the whole entire process.
And how do you ensure that as a business, you don't become greedy? Because, I mean, this is also work for you, so it needs to become an income. So how do you make sure that you don't end up thinking, okay, I'm not going to take this deal because from my business point of view, I'm not going to get a cut. But if you think about it in the future, it might just be, yes, it might not have a lot of money now, but it will create a very big impact for the artist in the future. So how do you exclude yourself sometimes and forget that, okay, fine, I'm in the business and this doesn't benefit me right now, but I think for the artist it will grow them and maybe later and draw in more money?
The business plan is the Bible.
Okay.
The business plan is the Bible. So that's what's going to guide us in terms of what we accept and what we don't accept. There's something that I really like saying is that as managers, yes, in the manager's space, you want to be number one, the best in the business. But in the bigger picture, you're number two because your artist is number one. So you're always going to have to see what is the most important thing. The most important thing is what's going to work for your artist. You know, so if the business plan guides us in a certain way where, okay, cool, that deal works for XYZ, mm-hmm. might not be a lot of money right now, but later on it might work out.
Mm-hmm.
Then if that's good for the artist, that's what we're going to do.
Okay. And from the talent side, what do you as management expect? I know, of course, you're signing a person who's a producer or who's a singer. You're expecting them to come with hits or rather do good at what you've signed them to do. But other than that, what do you expect from them?
I as the manager can't want this more than you. We can want it the same, but I can't want it more than you. The artist needs to understand that my job is to open doors for them to step in the rooms. Mm-hmm. They need to still step in the room and perform. That's it. Whether it's with brand, whether it's with fans, whatever the case is, my job is to create those opportunities for them to do their job. So they need to always be able to do their job consistently.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. It's very tough. I'm thinking of all my people right now. Because, like I said, I started this thing by saying these people are crazy, but like in a good way. I will put one of my artists. He's literally had the craziest year this year. He maybe rests once or twice a week. So we also have to be mindful of how they're feeling. As much as I want them to perform and I want them to go out on the road and do media, but I also need to make sure that they have time to like rest. Otherwise, they're going to flip out. They're going to act out. Then it's mm-hmm. going to be a movie.
And then you are basically you sell your artist. You are in rooms that they're not in and people need to take your word for it. How difficult is that? Now we are in a program where people here are all upcoming. Songwriters, producers, so forth. So my thing is, how do you sell someone who's not known? How do you let the big brand say, how do you tell someone that, listen, I think she's good or he's good, and allow that to speak?
I think one thing that you need to understand is that the management business is a relationship management business. It's you need to be able to build trust with the brands. You need to be able to build that relationship with the agencies. You need to be able to, so that they are able to take your word for it. For me, when it comes to an up-and-coming artist, a lot of the opportunities that we get, it's based on reputation, our reputation, as opposed to the artist's reputation. So that's why it's important as managers to always try and build those relationships. And then when your artist pops off, you'll see everybody's going to knock on the door.
Mm-hmm. And then for those that are here and they have the management but back at home and they're not here, what are the tips that you could give them to go back and tell them that, listen, I thought maybe this is how we can approach it things now. Maybe let's try this strategy. Maybe this is what works. How do you network also? Because it's easy to say someone needs to be in places, but not all those doors are open for someone to be in those places. So how do you get there?
I think let me answer the first question. The first question being, I think you put it right. The first thing that you need to do is always have that communication. I think the artist and the manager always have to be honest with themselves so that they don't gas each other up. The more you gas each other up, the more you're actually not going to see all the holes that you need to get, you need to fill in. So you always have to have those conversations and say, Eshba, honestly, this thing is not working. Eshba, no, this thing is, you know, if there's a target for money that you're trying to make, this money is not coming in right. How do we change it? So the more you guys communicate, because at the end of the day, there is no book. There's no book for this thing. There's no book that will guide you and say, this is how you blow up an artist, or this is how you become whatever. There's no book for it. You guys always consistently have to go back to the drawing board and say, is this thing working? Yes or no? If it's not working, how do we change it? How do we fix it? Then the networking part of it is a very difficult one. You got to shoot your shot. You have to shoot your shot. I'll make an example. When myself and my business partner Tiama started the business a couple of years ago, we started this business. We were in France, right? We were in France in the music workshop. How did we get to the music workshop? We were on the road with AKA, who was performing at the festival. What we did is we finessed, got our coins to get accreditation to go to music workshops. We get to music workshops, we start introducing ourselves. Introduce yourself as, I'm the biggest deal in Africa. You understand? Because they don't know better. They don't know better. So it's how you introduce yourself. So we introduce ourselves like we're the biggest people on the continent. The business hasn't been formed. It hasn't even been registered, you know? Then AKA gets booked to do another festival in the US. Then we go. There's a workshop there as well. Do the same thing. So we get there, some of the people that we met in France are there. So now they're starting to take us seriously. Basically, what I'm trying to say is go to as many of these things as possible. Mm-hmm. Get yourself out as much as possible so people can start recognizing you. Mm-hmm. The more they recognize you, the more they're going to start seeing that you're legit. Okay, this guy knows what he's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, don't think... There's a friend of mine that likes making jokes about this let's work conversation that happens in the club. A lot of us have those conversations with the club or with group. We say, hey, man, let's work. Hey, let's build. Don't rush that conversation. Build a relationship first. Let people start seeing you and knowing you. If you can get an email address, you know, if you get an email address, don't want that phone number because people are very, you know, with their phone numbers. Get an email address. Send them an email. Hey, this is me. You know, the next time you see them, hey, I sent you an email, blah, blah, blah. You know, so I think networking is literally shooting your damn shot as much as you can.
You did mention that there is no book and there's no formula, but I'm pretty sure that there are a few things that are essentials when trying to build someone's brand or when you're trying to manage a certain artist. So what are the few things that one needs to pay attention to? Of course, it will be different with each and every artist, but what are those few steps that are essential in everything?
Get yourself a damn good lawyer. That is important. I'm telling you. Let me tell you. I think for me, I learned over the years that is the most important thing. There's ways of doing this thing. You don't have to have 3 million rand to get a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the most important thing. I don't know how many times she's had to save our asses because we just did things willy-nilly. We're like, yo, let's just do this. But like, what does this mean? Google, sharp. That is rock. And then later on, now we're in the shit. Now I have to call her and say, "Baha, this is tough. How do I?" So I think it's important. I think that's the first step, because as a musician, you gotta understand all the laws that protect you as a musician, right? You gotta understand what you're signing. When you're in studio, and making that music, you guys are gonna have to walk out of that room with the split sheet. You know, otherwise we are going to fight again. I've got 4 or 5 different songs where in the beginning stages we didn't do split sheets. And then the song blows up. Then everybody's greedy. "Oh no, I did more than that. No, I did that. I came up with that. There's no proof." Mm-hmm. So if you can make sure that all your legal side of things is taken care of. So if it means, I don't know, man, there's options out there legal-wise or what. But honestly, that's the first thing. The second thing that you need to make sure that when you're building as an artist is make sure you have a team around you, or people, it doesn't even have to be a formal team, but people that are around you are people that understand that they are representing you and not themselves. Because the biggest problem that a lot of these artists, I've spoken to a lot of these artists like recently that are like blowing up, their teams become superstars. You understand? Then the manager doesn't want to go do that gig because there's no girlfriend there. No, he'd rather go to that one because he'll find girls there. So now it's all about the manager. So always find the right people around you and in your circle.
Okay, and then what are the questions that artists are supposed to be asking? So I'm blowing up, or I'm trying to blow up, and I need management. I feel like I need management. I get approached, or I don't, or I approach other management team. What are the questions that I should be asking you and to figure out whether this is good enough for me or it's not?
Number one, you got to look at the track record. You got to look at what they've done or what they're doing. I mean, a lot of people, they haven't done much and they're still building up. But in the little that they've done, if you can see that, okay, Sharp, this person is going somewhere, then at least you can be able to make your decision. But the other thing is that I think we live in a time and an age where information is there for us. You know, you got to try and ask as many questions as you can. Ooh, the question, "What does this mean?" isn't a difficult question. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone brings out a contract to you and puts it in front of you and say, "Hey, sign this," you got to ask, "What does this mean? What does each clause mean?" so that you understand how it, but also you must also be able to go and ask other people, because there's a lot of people, this industry is full of people that can finesse, I won't lie. Someone will tell you and sell you the whole entire world. You know, they'll sell you the whole world. You'll see yourself being the biggest star working with this person. But then when you start working, you're like,
but
it's nothing. You know, so ask a lot of questions. Ask a lot of, "What does this mean?" But ask other people as well. Don't be afraid to ask other people.
And then when do I don't think when you start out immediately you need management. So when is that essential pinnacle point for someone that's starting out? When do you say, "Okay, cool, I think right now, maybe this is the time to look for management"?
That bro that's with you in studio, making sure you're fed, that's your manager. You understand? That bro that is with you in the very beginning, so you can start building your system and your ecosystem with your boys. Mm-hmm. You know, give your boys responsibilities. You always, as the artist, you can't always be the guy that's running in front. You need other people to run for you, you know? So use the people around you. Give whoever's eager and hungry to work with you in your team, put them on, and we all build together.
To close off this conversation, so we might know as artists what we're looking for, but what is management precisely looking for? Because you could go and say, "I want to be managed by so-and-so," and they might feel like, "I don't see anything." So what is it that management is looking for when you're just trying to spot something, especially because it's young and it's growing? How do you see that, okay, this one kind of has potential?
I can't answer for other people, but honestly speaking, I've been doing this thing for way too long. So a lot of it is like a gut feeling.
Wow.
For me personally, so I can't answer for other people. For me, it's a gut feeling. If I don't feel it, for me, then I'm not going to do it. You know, I mean, other people might look at what your numbers are looking like, what are you looking like on SoundCloud and all of those things. But, You know, some might be looking at how you're presenting yourself, but for me personally, it's always a gut feeling.
So have you, in the past, ever taken someone that you genuinely didn't, like, on paper, it didn't make sense, but because of your gut, you went with it?
Tell you something, I did not like Musa Keys. I did not like Musa Keys. No, I honestly, I thought this kid was just doing too much. You know, he was trying too hard. You know, it's for me, this is like, I just didn't like him. But then when it was looking at, I look at him, I'll get annoyed. I'm like, damn, this kid is doing too much. But actually, I like it. You know, I actually really like it. And then, you know, Musa, he floods the streets with content, you know, so he's always in your face. But then when I looked at it and I was like, okay, Sharp, let me put my feelings of irritation aside. This bro is actually really brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, this bro is really brilliant. Then it worked out. It's been working out.
We are going to get into PR a bit later in the second session, but I want to know what's the difference between you and the PR people, because you are on the forefront of what's happening at the bank. So you spoke about social media, about numbers, about growing the brand. So what exactly differentiates you from PR?
I contract PR. Okay. You understand? So, for example, right now we're going to the UK for a couple of weeks. I'm going to find a publicist who's going to work the client. So for me, like I said, for me, it's the ecosystem and building overall. But I need to know enough about everything to know when someone's bullshitting me. So that's when I know, okay, Sharp, PR, no. Are you getting what? Me, putting me on that paper? No, that one doesn't work. You understand? So we contract PR to work on our brands and our clients.
All right. So I want to get into legal now, because...
Sorry, please listen to this one, guys. Honestly speaking, just listen.
We have heard a lot of stories. We have seen stories of people getting ripped off. We still hear it even now. You'd think it's a conversation that needs to be stopped. We should just stop talking about it because we've spoken about it so much. But it still happens till this day. People get ripped off. They don't get their royalties and so forth. So just to explain, what does TaylorMade Legal really step in and do? What are the things as artists we need to look out for?
I think the most important thing, and I have to go back to everything that Nivo said, which I think a lot of up-and-coming artists neglect, is you need legal from the onset. And you don't have to get an expensive lawyer. You don't have to go to, you know, a really big law firm to, you know, get the legal counsel that you need. But you need somebody with some kind of legal knowledge or some kind of at least interest in going through your paperwork, right? Because once you neglect that at the beginning or in the initial stages, then you find yourself with either problems with management or problems with your team structure or monies that you'd made in the beginning that you can never actually account for. And it's a big mess, right? So I want to debunk the narrative that, no, in the beginning, it's just going to be me and my boys and we're growing. Like, it doesn't work. Right. It really doesn't work, because when you guys start popping off and start making money, then it becomes very awkward and the conversation changes. Like, your boys are no longer your boys. It happens too many times. And I just want that to be noted from the onset. One thing that I'd say people need to look out for, and I've mentioned this numerous times, is just stressing the importance again of seeking legal counsel. A person who looks over your contracts is able to pick out certain things that you need to look out for. Very, I want to say, seemingly insignificant points in a contract or a conversation that happens, but that have very serious repercussions in the long run that a lot of people neglect. So paperwork, like anybody that gives you anything or anybody that says, your dog, let's do this, let's run with this. I have a concept. This is, you know, we have an investor. I like your song. I want to put it on radio. That needs to be in writing somewhere, right? I don't want to advise anyone to go off of things on word of mouth, because whatever is agreed to today is not going to be the same thing tomorrow. And you won't have any paper trail of what was spoken about or what you agreed to. So, I mean, it's very difficult to say what exactly to look out for, because various deals differ. So if it's music, deal memos differ. What you get from a, you know, a big label, am I allowed to mention labels? I don't know. Yeah, what you get from one label, you won't get from another. So, and if it's going, if you're in the, say, influencer space, your agreements differ from what you'd get in the music space. It's very difficult to really say what it is that you need to look out for, but with the right people and the right legal counsel, you'd be able to nitpick those things that really work for you as a person in the entertainment or the media space.
Okay, so we focused a lot this week on production and songwriting. So let's bring it to the music side of things. Yeah. So I get approached by a recording label, and now it's time to sign a contract. How long is too long? And because I mean, I've heard that you need it, once it's over 5 years, sometimes it's just start small and build up with that recording label. So what are the things that as an artist you should look out for, in the sense that, okay, maybe the time frame should be more or less like this or like that, and then percentage wise this is what you should be getting, you're being ripped off of this is what's being said, and so forth?
Again, there are many deals that a label can give you. So for instance, if one of the majors approach you, when I talk about majors, I'm talking about your Universals, Sonys, Warners, all of those. If a major approaches you, obviously you either they approach you or you approach a label and say, I'm looking for a single deal, which is what we usually advise, especially if you're trying to see how the label works. Say, I'm looking for a single recording deal so that you can see how they work that single, right? And then after there, you can make your decision in terms of exploitation of the sound, radio plugins, you know, just those things, you know, how they work the song. So you get single deals, you get license deals, you get joint ventures, and all those have different terms, right? So for instance, a license deal, you'd want to give them time to work your catalog. So when I talk catalog, it's all the music that you've either released or are yet to release, right? So with a license, for instance, you're looking at least, I don't know, 3 to 5 years, which is a fair amount of time to allow a label to do what it must for you to actually begin to see the fruits of the music that you've released, right? With a JV, still pretty much the same years. So with a JV is a joint venture. So it's you partnering with a label. So everything is split 50-50. Recording costs 50-50, PR 50-50. And if the label happens to spend money on recording or your PR marketing and all of that, then all those costs, it's that when if you do decide to maybe leave that partnership, then we need to run a P&L, which is your profit and loss. And then whatever surplus remains is split 50-50 between artist and the major. So that's a JV. Even the terms there, you're looking at least around 3 to 5 years, with a license very similar to that. So, I mean, I wouldn't advise anybody to go into a deal that would lock you in for longer than you realistically want to stay in something. I don't imagine anybody today wanting to stay with a label for 10 years, because anything today, you may be, you know, not so hot, right? And you're happy with how they're doing things. But who's to say that in 3 years' time or 5 years' time, you actually want to be with the same label? If you want to go international, now you're locked in and you either have to work with their subsidiaries, so maybe a Sony International, or you know what I mean? So you want to think ahead, right? It's all very interesting when it comes to you now, but you need to have foresight. This is why it's so important to have a team that actually thinks, just not, it's all exciting now, but what does it mean for us 3 to 5 years from now? Like Nevo said, business plan, golden, right? And with TaylorMade, and this is I suppose the very interesting part of what we do is that though we are and we offer legal consulting services, we're 40% legal and 60% business affairs. Because for us to solely look at the artists themselves and their craft, for us is very narrow-minded, because the artist is a brand at the end of the day. And even if they are not a brand right now, we look at you as a brand and as a business. So the advice that we give you does not solely focus on, I want to drop a song next month. It also focuses on, Shab, you want to drop this song next month, but you seem to also be doing a lot in the street fashion space, for instance. What brands would you like to work with? What does that look like with you? Then we call on agents and all sorts of other people that we have in our ecosystem to say, look, let's build brand Lisaha, as more than just an artist. She also likes whiskey. Let's make her work with Jamison, for instance. You know what I mean? So you need to have a team that doesn't just focus on the music, but is also broad in the sense that they also look at the repercussions or what certain deals would mean for you a couple of years from now, essentially.
Okay, so you did mention earlier on about split shares and so forth. So now here I am, I have a song, I believe in it, I think it's really going to pop. And now it's time to release the song. What's the right process in terms of releasing it, in terms of split shares, and what does that really entail? Especially also features and collaborations, how did that go about? How do you decide that, okay, no, fine, this is my song, I'm going to feature you, or no, this is our song? How does that all go about?
Okay, so with regards to the release itself, right? And I want to take a step back. In terms of split sheets, you need to sort that out the day that you guys record that song. So the moment you get into studio, have just the paper that you say, these are all the people that are on the song. This is what they did. If you're a producer, you fall under the producer side. If you are on the vocals, you fall under the author, singer, songwriter side. And then you now begin to split, these are the primary artists and, 50% goes to label. The remainder goes to everybody else on the song. Then you now begin to split your publishing. You know what I mean? So even that, it sounds very complicated and tricky, but it's really not, and it saves you a world of trouble, right? And what you don't want to do is release a song not having discussed those very important things. Because, like Nivo said, you go into studio, record a song, gets released, you don't anticipate that it'll blow up, but it does. And then tomorrow it's, okay, so who's getting what royalties out of this song? How much of it am I actually entitled to? So you want to have those conversations at the initial stages and not later on. And then in terms of the release, you can release that however, I suppose. I mean, it's not unless you sign to a label, obviously, then there's processes, submissions, and all of those things. But there's people who just are self-published. They aren't with any kind of label, so you just kind of release music and they're able to plug themselves with DSPs. DSPs are, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, and all of that. In terms of selecting or picking who to feature, well, I suppose you record a song or you want to record a song, you call a couple of guys into studio. We all know, that's my song, you featured on my song, it's my song, and I called you to produce or mix and master, whatever. Right. And that essentially is the structure. In terms of picking out collaboration and features, I mean, with a collab, I guess everything boils down to a conversation, right? You came into studio, or I don't know, we were using your studio and I wanted to record my song. You mixed and mastered, I was on vocals. Do you want to be a producer? Do you want your credits as a producer? Or do you want it to be a Nivo and Lisaha song? You know what I mean? So everything boils down to a conversation, but it's important to have that conversation at the very beginning, either the day the song is recorded, but before the release.
And then in terms of masters, so I've learned that you actually, the people who own the masters of the song is whoever owns the studio at which it was recorded, if I'm not wrong. So my question is, how do I then say it's my song, but I don't own the masters? Or how do I ensure that I own those masters? What do I do?
Well, firstly, the person who you recorded, if you use somebody's studio to record your song, is not the owner of the song or the master owner. I can go into studio today and say, I want to use Nivo's studio. That doesn't mean that now because I recorded in his studio, it's his song. It's look at it as a work for hire type of thing. I'm paying you to use your studio. You've allowed me into your space. Sure, thank you. Here's your money. I take my product. Mm-hmm. Just because I walked into Pick and Pay and bought something doesn't mean, I don't even know. It was a bad analogy. But exactly, like I'm not going to suddenly own Pick and Pay because you know what I mean. Yeah. So essentially, debunk that thought. Just because you use somebody's studio, the song, you are the master right owner or the copyright holder, whatever. The person look at it as a work for hire, or you rendered a service to me and I paid you for it. So essentially that's that. What was the second question? I just needed to like get that clear. It happens too often. So I just need you guys to really understand that no, you do still own your masters, irrespective of whether you use somebody else's studio or not.
Okay, I guess that answers the second question, because the second question was, if that's the case, well, how do I make sure that I end up owning my masters without my own studio? Mm-hmm. So, but since you do mention that it doesn't mean that, then I guess automatically it means I own my masters as long as... So what happens if I didn't pay for it? It's a thing of, I know you... And you have a recording label, you have your own studio, it's known, but I know you. And it was just like Angzile, and I did it. And then later on, and I need to release the song. Fine, the song might be mine, but I don't own its masters.
And again, I suppose it boils down to conversation, right? This person whose studio you used, and did they do anything on the song? If they did mixing and mastering, then you can have a conversation of, look, I'm willing to give you a portion of the copyright or the publishing share, right? And if they produce the whole thing and you still use their studios, credits also go a long way. And people actually fight for these things. Just credit them, just to say, X song on your DSP is produced by Lee Art. You know what I mean? So it's, again, boils down to a conversation. And I don't want people to neglect or ignore to have these conversations, because tomorrow when the song blows up, you'll find yourselves beefing for absolutely no reason.
And then I want us to get into royalties. What is royalties? Let's start it there. What are royalties? And how do you make sure that it's actually the X amount that you deserve, in the sense that we have so many public platforms where music is played. I, for one, am familiar with the Sambro one and how they do their work. But now we are very digital too. So how are we getting our royalties when music is being played and streamed everywhere?
So what are royalties? I think that's the first and most important thing to know and understand. Royalties, simply put, money generated from your song, right? So whether it's from streaming, needle time, radio time, all of that, that's money. Those are what royalties are. So your net receipts from streams and all sorts. Royalties, and I suppose it's important for me to also mention the organizations that facilitate or collect royalties. And you mentioned Samro, Sampra, Capasso. Those are all your collection societies. And when you've released a song, after a certain number of years, I wouldn't say months, because I mean, you wouldn't necessarily have much to collect, because you need to allow things to play to make money. So you'd go to your collection societies and say, listen, this, and ordinarily they'd send you a statement to say you are on such and such a song, and this is the split that was agreed to. This is, again, going back to split sheets, because you, as the master right owner, have to submit those splits to the collection societies so that when they do apportion, say your song made 50 rand mm-hmm. and now I am due 10% of that, you as the owner are due 40%, and then Nivo's also due his I don't know, 5%, and somebody else is due something else. They submit that, and then that is what you collect. You collect your 10% or your 5% according to those splits. Mm-hmm. So yeah, essentially, those are royalties. Those are your collection societies, and that is who you go to when you want to collect your money.
And how are they calculated?
According to your split sheets.
No. I mean, how does Sambro know this is how much I owe you? What's per song? Mm. Like, what's the calculation? Because I know, I think with Spotify, or is it YouTube? I think it's like 5 cents per stream or so forth.
It's a very tricky conversation.
Yeah.
It is a very, very tricky
So conversation. How is it calculated? And also on radio, is it a thing of once it's played today and then it's played tomorrow and it's played the other day, does that accumulate to something? I just want to know the calculations.
So these collection societies, or, you know, the institutions that actually collate this data, so they collate data from all platforms. So in a DSPs, radio time, where it's playing. And if you're signed to like a major, they send you, what do you call this? Radio playlists. So yeah. So essentially that's how they collate their data. And then, and if you, again, if you're with the distro, they are also able to collate that data for you. So your plays accumulate X amount, and then it will be per song. And especially when you request this data from a distributor, for instance, you would request your statements per song, right? That way you're able to see how much each song has made. And then you go back to your split sheet and say, we made 50 rand on this song. I, Lesego, am entitled to 10%. Therefore, I'm going to invoice 10% of the full amount, essentially. That's how they collate that data. They have their own system. They have their own programs. I'm not sure how it works. I don't work at collection societies. But you can request these statements, and they are readily available for you. And I need people to know that after a certain number of years, I mean, you still can, because, I mean, the data is still very much there, but I wouldn't wait longer than a certain amount of time before you actually go and say, I want monies for X song.
What is X certain amount of time?
I mean, I wouldn't let at least 3-5 years pass. I wouldn't advise that you let it sit for 10 years. I mean, no.
So could it be that you wouldn't get it, or would it just be a hassle to get it?
Yeah, just relieve yourself of the administrative mess. Honestly.
I was just say, exhaust the full affairs.
Exactly. So, I mean, look, a three-year period. Give yourself a three-year grace period. Let the money do, I mean, let the song do what it needs to do so it can accumulate something that's sensible, then go collect.
All right, to round it off, you touched a bit on copyrights. Is that the same thing as a split sheet of just knowing that, okay, you published, you are the writer, you are the producer? Is it simply just that, or what exactly are copyrights?
So when I talk about copyright, I'm talking about, I mean, on your split sheet, you have your master royalty share, mm-hmm. and then you also have your copyright or publishing share,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's what you'd split between the singer-songwriter. And then you'd also split that between your producers. So it's not the same thing. So you have a copyright percentage or split on a split sheet. And then the copyright is the apportionment of your publishing.
All right. So I just want to open it up to the audience. So it's going to be questions from both sides. If you have questions about management, questions about legal, I think the mic is on there. So if you could just raise your hand if you have a question, I'll pick who can go, and then we can have a Q&A session quickly. All right.
Hi. Just have two quick questions. And
Okay, I'm familiar with this masters. I've heard about masters, but I would like to know, what are masters? Is it something tangible? And then the second question is, if I'm featured on the song with a particular assistant, can I use the same song? Like, he's got the same song in his album. Can I also put that song on my album soon?
Okay. Just the first question on what are masters. So when you talk about masters, we're talking about, it's not something tangible, like it's your song. Yeah. Essentially, we're talking, I want to say master rights or rights to a track. Like, you know, when you talk about a master recording, we're talking about the song, right? And that's it's not something tangible. It's not, yeah. So that's essentially what we're talking about. When somebody mentions masters or master recording or owning your masters, am I owning my music, essentially? The second question on somebody else wanting to use a song that is on somebody else's album. Had you worked on that song with them? Also, you're featured and then you want to add that onto your, again, matter of a conversation, right? But that becomes very tricky because do you now consider that a collab? Because now the credits now differ, right? If you were featured, it would be X featuring you. But now if you're going to now put it on your album, what does that arrangement look like? And that's the kind of conversation that you need to talk about from the initial state, from the onset. Like, do you intend to use the song? Yes, I actually do want to drop an album at a later stage and I want to incorporate that song into my album. Sharp, let's make it a X and X song, essentially. But now it changes a whole lot in terms of dynamics because you now look at it as who actually owns the song, right? And then your splits now come into the question and say, who gets the lion's share of the master? Who gets the lion's share in terms of copyright? Because who does the song actually belong to? So if you're going to do something like that, have that conversation from the beginning before anybody actually releases the song, so that if it's going on two separate projects, you don't have an issue of, you know, that's actually my song. Why is it on your album? You know, so yeah.
I laugh because I recently dealt with a situation like that. The story goes, producer comes to one of my clients' houses and says, hey, let's work on music. Producer has the song on his, I think maybe 20% of what the song is on his laptop. They work on it together, right? Then when they agree, okay, no, it's going to be both our song. Now, when we then have to now sort out the paperwork, we also now, unfortunately, sorry, I'm going to use this Zulu. So what I did, I said, okay, cool. You guys did the song. It's going to be the two of your song, right? But between the two of you guys, my guy's the bigger artist. And if he drops it, it's going to help the whole song. Okay, cool. Then we agree. Now here's the other mess. Now let's talk percentages, right? This guy's like, no, I want to have the song on my album too. Then I say, no, but the problem is we are going to do all of this work building the song. Yes, the song is going out as A and B on this song. It's our song, but we're going to do all the work. You're going to get a percentage from what we're doing. Then when you drop your album later on, you are going to be benefiting from all the work that we did. So back to paperwork. We said, okay, cool. You know what? Let's do this. We will give you X percentage of the royalties on this song. But what will happen is you can't drop it on your album, right? Because I need to make sure my client is happy as well, because I don't want to have a year later someone else is dropping the song. Just confuses a lot of things. So that's where also paperwork comes in. So have your discussion, have your arrangement, but always come back and get the paperwork done. Always.